The program previously scheduled for this time will not be heard, so that we may bring you this excursion into the world of William Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. It is called A Magic Journey. All credits will be given at the end of the show. Hi, everyone. This is Dan MacDonald, your conductor in a journey across the globe into a dream play by William Shakespeare. Our destination is the realm of the little people, led by Dr. James Almond, an ethnomusicologist who understands the music of the world's peoples. Finally, we'll return to the world of reality to share original ideas about Shakespeare Uncovered with the show's music director, Stephen Hodges. Come with me now. We're going to find Dr. Almond, who knows the musical path into A Midsummer Night's Dream. Dr. Almond, I presume?
'Tis I, sir.
The initials of your name spell out A Midsummer Night's Dream. They say you know how to get into Shakespeare's dream, down to the world of fairies and elves.
That world is always with us, the world that Shakespeare was writing about.
So how did they get down into that realm of the fairies?
Shakespeare perhaps put it best by calling it a dream. Not so much in things that are not real, although certainly lots of those kinds of things happen in a dream, in a kind of, shall we say, exalted or prophetic state of mind.
The fascinating thing about it is a certain 17-year-old brilliant person named Felix Mendelssohn went into the garden, into the realm of the fairies. Dr. Almond, how does Mendelssohn take us down into the world of the little people?
When he begins the overture to Midsummer Night's Dream, we hear four chords that transport us there. They immediately take us out of our surroundings and bring us immediately into the forest.
How do we get out of this realm?
Well, to get out of this realm, you have to go through the whole journey. And Mendelssohn provides us the whole journey actually within the overture. Of course, there's plenty of more music to come to go with the play, but within the confines of the overture, we will hear the various characters. You will hear the most anti-hero of anyone in Shakespeare's comedies, Nick Bottom, who is transformed at one point into a character with the head of a donkey braying in the overture.
Dr. Almond, what kind of a place is this? There's little people with name tags. There's Philostrani and Possel Blossom, and another one called Cobweb, and there's one called Moat. And look, there's one called Mustard Seed. Wow, these are cute little people, aren't they?
Well, yes, but we must understand that these are not Walt Disney fairies. These are individuals who can do great good or great harm to mortals like ourselves. In the course of the play, of course, lots of mischief gets done on the mortals involved. The two pairs of lovers, which becomes a triangle with one odd person out at different times and a different person at different times.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's the squabble between the king and the queen, Oberon and Titania, the king and queen of the fairies. The four are named actually for things that you would find in your garden. Peas blossom, a pea plant, has a beautiful blossom. Cobweb, of course, needs no explanation. A moth, mustard seed. All of those individuals are attendants, one may say, on the king and queen, but particularly on their kind of jack of all trades, a fellow named Puck or Robin Goodfellow. A little bit more about him might be germane to the discussion, because within almost every mystical tradition that we find in Northern Europe and in England, there is a trickster. We find him, by the way, in Native American traditions as well. The trickster can take many, many forms, sometimes an animal of some sort or a force of nature or whatever. In this case, Puck is the character who kind of makes everything happen. Now, he doesn't quite do his job correctly and has to correct quite a number of mistakes that he makes.
Are you saying he mixes things up?
He mixes things up terribly, and that is the source of much of the comedy in the play.
Dr. Amon, run! There's a lion in the bush!
Well, I'm afraid not. That's the four players. They are rather bad players, actually. There's a play within a play here, as in much of Shakespeare, and this play is being performed by four, shall we say, less intellectual characters who are mortals like ourselves. Quince, a carpenter. Snug, a joiner. Bottom, a weaver, who we've mentioned previously. And Flute, a bellows maker.
Well, that must have been the joiner.
Snug.
And his voice is that of a lion. Well, I was just scared for nothing. Okay. Dr. Amon, who is the guy with the ears like Dr. Spock?
Well, Dan, just because a person has unusual ears is no reason to poke fun at them. And after all, in Faerie, F-A-E-R-Y, the realm, you'll find people with lots of different shaped ears or other appendages, and no one thinks twice about it. But I think the fellow you're referring to is our friend Puck.
Right, and I'm just wondering, why is the music following Puck around?
Because Puck is always going to be playing jokes on everyone that he possibly can. Mendelssohn, our composer, brings this out with a scherzo. In musical terms, a scherzo is a joke.
Mr. Mendelssohn wrote scherzos like nobody else, didn't he?
Mm. Yes, he did. And he had probably a greater understanding, in some sense, of the play almost than we would, because he would have read it in both English and German. Thank you.
There's something you don't see every day. There's a guy wearing a donkey's head.
That would be our friend Nick Bottom the Weaver. He's been transformed by Puck as one of his jokes.
And he doesn't even know he's wearing a donkey's head, does he?
No. But then perhaps we've met individuals in our own experience who don't appear to be quite as donkeyish as they think they are.
Well, when Mendelssohn tried to depict that donkey head on Bottom, he used a special device in music. You're really smart about music, so what was that device?
There are a couple of terms we could use. We might call it an appoggiatura, the idea of the sound of the bray of a donkey. He uses the interval of a downward ninth as an appoggiatura. A downward ninth, if you take the more familiar interval of the octave, for example, from C down to C, that's an octave or eight notes in a scale. If we go a downward ninth, we've gone from the D above that C down to the bottom C.
And you've got a donkey in music.
And you've got a donkey, and specifically Mr. Bottom himself.
Wow.
Midsummer Night was a festival, or one might say a holy day, in the Druid and pagan traditions of the time. Shakespeare was certainly conscious of those. Many of those traditions are still observed in parts of Northern Europe and certainly in the British Isles. Shakespeare was very careful to kind of mix up all of his mythologies in the play so that he... frankly, wouldn't get in trouble with the church at the time. But as far as the whole process of A Midsummer Night's Dream, it can be thought of as a kind of revelation or enlightenment kind of process for everyone involved. Not only the human characters, up to and including the Duke of Athens and his betrothed, but also the fairies themselves, Oberon and Titania, the king and queen of the fairies. They also go through a great deal of mischief and tribulation to discover perhaps a deeper meaning of what love is. Certainly Mendelssohn himself would have been familiar with those pagan traditions that were throughout Northern Europe at the time. They would have been there, certainly in Berlin. And to this day, there are plenty of people who are quite sincere in their belief of the little people, however you think about it, precisely. And they may or may not be little, but tradition assumes that they are smaller than we are.
Dr. Almond, there's reptiles up in those trees. Boy, do they look funny.
Spotted snakes are curious creatures. The snake in tradition, and certainly within the tradition that Shakespeare would have known here. They're carriers both of threat, as they would be to you and I, if they were unidentified snakes, certainly. And they're the carriers of knowledge. They're the carriers of, sometimes, certain kinds of mystical powers. Each creature that you would find in this forest has some kind of, shall we say, overriding or underlying significance, a kind of quality, or, in the case of the snakes, a kind of power.
I didn't know the snakes could sing.
We can also compare that with other reptiles that are reputed to have sung. For example, mermaids in the ocean have the bottom part of a fish, and certainly they do sing. Their rather more threatening counterparts, called the sirens, were creatures who were partly women and partly reptile, and they would sing soldiers to their deaths on the rocks that they hung out on.
We better move on, because we don't want to be...
I'd rather not.
I'd rather not also. It seems to me like great preparations are going on here in the Elves' Land. There's going to be a celebration of love here, isn't there, Dr. Almond?
There certainly is. This entire play is a celebration of love. It is centered around the upcoming marriage of Theseus, Duke of Athens, to Hippolyta, Queen of the Amazons. Apparently, we're not given a whole lot of backstory about them in the play, but apparently Theseus won Hippolyta in fair fight, in warfare, she being Queen of the Amazons. This is an example of Shakespeare kind of almost mixing his metaphors or mixing his mythology, if you will, Theseus is perhaps best known as the fellow who vanquished the Minotaur in the labyrinth on Crete. But here he's back home in Athens as the Duke and getting ready to, I would hope, settle down a bit. It must get rather tiresome, you know, killing Minotaurs all the day.
Yeah. Well, these characters that are putting together this play as a kind of a celebration for the marriage of these two very important people, there's some strange people among them, like Francis Flute, for example. He's the guy that mends the bellows. He's been chosen to play a young girl in love. And here is a guy with a beard.
Yes, yes. In the play within a play, Shakespeare refers to the traveling players as clowns. Six of them: Quince, a carpenter; Snug, a joiner; Bottom, a weaver; Flute, the bellows mender; Snout, tinker; and Starveling, a tailor. Notice that their names all have something to do with their profession.
They're craftsmen, aren't they?
That's right.
The craftsman's play.
This is something that would go back to the traditions around Shakespeare, traditions that he knew. Many of us are familiar with, for example, the Mummers' play around Christmas time in England. There were lots of traditions where particular craft guilds of one sort or another would step out of their ordinary business and put on plays of various kinds, both tragic and comic. Here, of course, they attempt to put on a tragic play and it turns into downright farce.
Well, no wonder Francis Flute tried to imitate a girl's voice. What a comical moment.
Correct. And of course, our lion makes certain at the beginning, he comes out and makes a big speech about how the young women in the audience shouldn't be frightened of him just because his lion's roar is so authentic and so terrifying.
Well, what a beautiful ceremony, and that march is so familiar to everyone. Mendelssohn was a genius, wasn't he?
Complete genius.
And a teenager, too.
I guarantee you, at 17, I was not writing music like that. The wedding march, which actually concludes the whole play using Mendelssohn's score, that wedding march came to be pretty much a standard postlude for weddings everywhere, at least in the Western world. That happened because of another little tradition that came up. It was used at the wedding of Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. And of course, everyone wanted to have music like the Queen had. So that became, along with, by the way, Wagner's wedding march from Lohengrin, Elsa's procession to the cathedral. Those two pieces came to be associated almost exclusively with weddings. When we talk about how this play works, if we think about Puck's speech at the end, he addresses the audience directly and says, don't be overly concerned by what you've seen on this stage. Think of it as a dream, which is, of course, part of the whole idea of the play. Understanding all of this as a play, as parts that we play, it relates to, for example, the ways that we fall in love. Shakespeare goes into great detail to tell us how these things happen within the action of the play, and to make sure we get it, presents us a slapstick play within the play about the processes of falling in love, and then at the end reminds us again that this might just be a dream, like the things that we see on a stage.
And it's theater, isn't it, Dr. Ahmed?
It absolutely is theater of the highest order.
Dr. Ahmed, you brought me here to Shakespeare's Shrine, symbolized in music by 17-year-old Felix Mendelssohn. You were right, Dr. Ahmed. The same four chords brought us back to reality. Thank you for taking us there and bringing us back.
My honor and pleasure, sir.
Goodbye, Dr. Ahmed.
Farewell, Dan.
The name of this song is Dreamland, played by a popular virtuoso of the 60s and 70s, Chet Atkins. Dreamland sets the mood for Shakespeare Uncovered, Season 2, which will feature six Shakespeare films on PBS during the months of January and February 2015, produced by Richard Denton on WNET. Number one is the PBS series in Shakespeare's eternally popular A Midsummer Night's Dream, led by Hugh Bonneville on January 30th. And here's the big news. Please mark your planners now for the spectacular live production right here in Tallahassee of A Midsummer Night's Dream, coming up April 17th, 18th, and 19th, 2015, at Cascades Park. So I am excited. It is my good fortune to welcome the music director of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. Welcome aboard, Stephen Michael Hodges.
Thank you.
I'd just like to call you Steve. Is that okay?
Perfect.
And I'm welcoming Lanny Thomas, artistic director of Southern Shakespeare Festival.
Act 1, Scene 2, The Setting.
Steve, I'm convinced you're a musician's musician. You've worked as a touring professional. You've rolled up your sleeves to create soundscapes. You've provided original music for live theater productions. I'm thinking of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and Next Fall and Much Ado About Nothing, just to mention a few. You're an experienced acoustic and electric guitarist. You play one of the most difficult stringed instruments to my way of thinking, the mandolin. You've got experience performing Celtic, swing, rock, jazz, and country, so you're no stranger to the theater, having worked in stage productions on and off since school. Audiences around these here parts have gotten to know you as a composer of light, instrumental, and vocal music. And that includes incidental music for Shakespeare. I'll bet you have a ball with music, don't you?
It's actually a lot of work.
I'm surprised.
It's fun. It's gratifying. It tickles a part of my brain that needs to be tickled every now and then.
I reckon that's really why we're here. Folks want to know what's coming up for you very soon, like Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is on the boards April 17th, 18th, and 19th at Cascades Park. But first, let's talk about an important event that's happening across the country through PBS
And right here at Clayman Plaza on January 31st, there's going to be a 60s groovin' gala, and everyone's invited. Lenny, tell us about that event.
Well, because we are setting Midsummer in 1967, the gala itself will be all things 60s. So if you have go-go boots, if you have bell bottoms, if you have peace signs and love beads, it's sort of a costume ball in that regard. And it's going to be held at the Mint Lounge in Versailles, which is on Clayman Plaza. It's connected to 101 Restaurant. And 101 Restaurant Group is our major food sponsor for the festival also. And so there'll be games, there'll be speeches. And of course, one of the centerpieces is the fact that the project that we've been doing with WFSU-TV is going to be airing there, even though it's actually the first episode will air on the 28th. And then the following 2 weeks, we did some video with Rob Diaz de Viejas, and they will be showing that at the gala.
Guys have been working very hard over there on the TV side.
Yes.
We all live in the same building here.
Yes.
This is a great place to be, so I'm anxious to see it. What time does this begin?
The gala begins at 6:30 at Clayman Plaza, and there is actually going to be free valet parking.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
This is kind of a fundraising event, too, isn't it?
It is. We have a three-pronged attempt to get us to the festival. We have the production. We have a festival day, which is Saturday, the 18th. So all day there will be things that will be both Renaissance and 60s in Cascades Park. And that will be going on, which will culminate in the performance that evening. All year round, we're doing an educational outreach program. So Dr. Kevin Carr is going to be working with the Leon County School System, with FSU and the OLE program, which is the Lifelong Learning Institute. And throughout Tallahassee, we're just trying to get Shakespeare out there people get involved. The profits from this gala will go into our educational program.
Do you have a cast member that's playing the role of Bottom in this work?
Indeed, we do. There's a story behind that, and that is that we are looking at establishing a festival that goes on for years, and this is just the first year of it. In order to do that and to move it into a professional company, we need to hire what they call Actors Equity, which is the union that controls stage actors and stage managers. And so because we're new for the first 3 years, we have to work under what's called a guest artist contract, which means we can only have a certain number of equity actors employed up until the third year. And then the fourth year, we can actually start a company with more equity actors and allow the people who are in Tallahassee who are not equity to earn points towards their equity card. So it's all sort of a long process. This first year, we're bringing back Jeff Cantor, who grew up here in Tallahassee, was in the Young Actors Theater. He's now in New York as a working actor and works all over the country. So he's coming back to play the role of Bottom.
You have got so many people in this community that love theater. And I'm just wanting you to tell me what folks can do to help you establish this operation as an ongoing operation in Tallahassee.
Thank you for saying that, because we would love to have as many volunteers who can help us out in terms of the festival, who can help us out in terms of the education program. We will have a cast, and so people who want to be part of it that way can also come and be volunteering to be part of the production.
I hear words coming from my listeners. They want to know, how could they get to you?
The best way, I think, is probably through our website, which is http://southernshakes.org. And there are places to sign up on that website, how to contact us by email. And that's probably the quickest way to get through to us and find a way. We have several committees, people who are working with the festival, people who are working with the production, the technical side of the production. And
there's lots to do.
There's lots to do.
I know
that. We could use all the help we can get, too.
I know you're going to be hearing from folks in this area. The immortal words of Shakespeare never change, but the style of the production can and does change. How does this affect the design of your music, Steve?
Since the play is set in 1967, the obvious choice for music is to mine the hits of that period, 1966 through 68. That's the range that I'm using to look at songs. Lanny has listened to that music extensively as well. That's kind of the music of his time when he was a teenager. I turned 9 years old in 1967, but I had a little transistor radio that I listened to under my pillow almost every night. That music is so deeply ingrained in me from that experience. Of course, you know, I've been interested in the music business for a long time, so I'm quite aware of most of these tunes. So part of the difficulty is not only choosing the right song, but trying to winnow it down from the huge choice of songs that you do have. Now, there are some parts of the play that are actually songs. Shakespeare had songs in his play, but he did not provide any directions on what those should sound like. That has given a lot of creative license to composers and directors and music directors over the years. In this particular case, I'm trying to think of not only trying to express the emotion of that particular moment, but also what is an appropriate style for what we're doing.
Many of our listeners are interested in theater, and of course, music goes right along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And they always want to know, how does a composer compose? Is it a mysterious process or some deeply personal thought process? How do you get your ideas? And you did say something about that just previously. Could you enlarge upon that, please?
Well, in the case of a Shakespeare play, most of the productions are set in that time period, the Renaissance and following the Renaissance. I have some experience in traditional music, and so it's a fairly simple thing to do to read the words, look for the rhythm of the lines themselves, and then again, what emotions are you really dealing with there? You're creating a soundscape, but it's also an emotional soundscape. So that would influence, for instance, whether it was a major tune that you're trying to write. And I use the word tune loosely, major or minor. It could be in a three-quarter rhythm. It could be in a 4-4. It could be much more rubato, where you have much more license in the rhythm of it. In the case of the fairy song, which I had to compose music for, I wanted to start with a clean slate. I didn't want to go back and listen to what other people have done, because I'm really a minor composer at the very best. You know, I have members of my family who have gone through the composition program at FSU, for instance, and they really know what they're doing. But this is, you know, maybe 8 lines, and it shouldn't be that difficult. So for the fairy song, I was experimenting one morning with my mandolin. I was actually in a hotel room, and I had to come up with something. I was playing around with some melodies, thinking this particular tune needed to be composed not only to fit in a play in 1967, but also to work for a much more traditional setting, which we did for WFSU as part of the video portion of this whole series of programs.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful.
So it had to have an old feel, but yet be simple enough that it would work on just different instruments, you know, maybe an electric guitar, maybe an electric keyboard. So I experimented with some chord progressions, played around with some melodies, and something just came to me, and I pulled out my iPhone. I recorded a couple of versions of it. I refined it, shared that. I love technology. I actually created that sound file, and then I emailed that to 2 vocalists that I had hired for that particular project. They knew immediately what to do with it, and they worked out a harmony. It was so gratifying to hear that in the rehearsals. I was not present for the actual video shooting out in the woods. I can't wait to see it.
Your modesty does become you. I've heard that you've worked with some great creative people in Tallahassee Theater. Let me picture this event. All of the attention is on your group. There's no need to wave a baton, right?
I don't think so. A lot of this can be done through eye contact.
And the incidental music, will there be singers?
Well, the incidental music itself will be pre-recorded.
Mm-hmm.
The music for the show will be live. Lanny and I are having discussions about singers. My idea is that we have a couple of cast people who perhaps have a little bit of singing experience or training. They can hopefully belt something out. Now, the musicians can change the keys of the tunes. That's no problem. So we can work with the singers. One of the musicians is a local keyboard player named Evan Powell. Evan went through the FSU jazz program, and he is amazing. I've worked with him a number of times.
I'll bet he is, yes.
Yes, he's a nice guy. He's very easy to work with. I'm also hopefully going to be working with 2 other music school students. One is a bass player and the other is a drummer. They were among several recommended to me by Leon Anderson, who teaches at the School of Music.
Oh, yes.
So I'm looking forward to working with them.
Hey, guys, let's enjoy a little 1967's nostalgia by Groovin' with Jimi Hendrix. This is his third stone from the sun.
Thank you.
been listening to Third Stone from the Sun by Jimi Hendrix. We've been talking with Steve Hodges, the music director, and Lanny Thomas, artistic director of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, which will be on the boards at Tallahassee's Cascades Park on April 17th, 18th, and 19th, 2015. And here's an exciting addition happening at Cascades Park during the Southern Shakespeare Festival Day on Saturday, April 18th. You'll be able to enjoy a short program of Mendelssohn's Midsummer performed by Ballet Arts Conservatory of Tallahassee. This is a special preview performance of the Ballet Arts Conservatory of Tallahassee's full-length program of A Midsummer Night's Dream, scheduled for June 5th and 6th, 2015. For more information, please visit www.bactdance.com/.
That's going to be here before you know it. I'll tell you what, Steve, I'd like for you to give me the benefit of your personal feeling about this great Tallahassee event. Just before you go out there, do you get knots in your tummy?
I'm sure I'll have some anxiety, but the best way to get on top of that is to be very well rehearsed.
Amen. Lanny, anything you'd like to add at this particular time about
the show that we're putting on April 17 through 19? The weekend before, there is another special events at Cascades Park. So what that means is that it's called Word of South, and it's going to be a fairly large event.
It's a concert, yeah.
Yeah, and so we are going to move in to the theater on Monday, and we're going to have our first preview on Thursday night. So the amount of time on the stage to rehearse is going to be rather short. And we're going to be doing all sorts of things with Steve leading the band, which will be on stage throughout the show, with microphones for all the actors, with live video being shot and used in the show with projections onto a projection screen. It's going to be fun. Technically, it's going to be a very difficult show to put up in 3 days.
I'll be there.
Okay.
Wouldn't want to miss this event at all. Stephen Michael Hodges, it's such a pleasure to have you here at WFSQ. And I want to thank you also, Lanny Thomas, Artistic Director of Southern Shakespeare Festival. Thank you for being here. Best to you now.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Dan. See you there.
Here are the musical selections heard on Shakespeare Uncovered, beginning with Mendelssohn's The Hebrides Overture, played by the New York Philharmonic, Leonard Bernstein conducting, which was followed by a Philips Classical CD entitled A Midsummer Night's Dream, with music by Felix Mendelssohn, containing the overture and incidental music performed by the Vienna Philharmonic, partnering with the Vienna Boys Choir, together with Ava Lind, soprano, and Christine Cairns, mezzo-soprano, Andre Previn conducting. Also included was a Smithsonian Folkways recording of the biological significance of voice in frogs, and Third Stone from the Sun by Jimi Hendrix, and Dreamland with Chet Atkins on guitar. Shakespeare Uncovered is made possible by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Major funding is also provided by Joseph and Robert Cornell Memorial Foundation, Dana and Virginia Rant, and Lou Esther T. Mertz Charitable Trust, the Lillian Goldman Programming Endowment, the Polonsky Foundation, Rosalind P. Walter, Jody and John Arnholt, the Corinthian International Foundation, and PBS. Get ready to join the Southern Shakespeare Festival and have a barrel of fun at the 60s Groovin' Gala, sponsored in part by the Tallahassee Democrat, with live music by your favorite local band, Black Cat Bones. You'll enjoy go-go dancers, food and drink from 101 Restaurant, and much more. This is a themed event. I'm wearing my bell-bottoms, white shoes, white belt, and tie-dyed shirt. Why don't you come dressed in your favorite 60s attire? It does not matter if you dress like Janis Joplin, James Bond, or even JFK. The decor will be all things 60s. It's on Saturday, January 31st at 6:30 p.m. Please come to the Mint Lounge and you can enter through Versailles, 215 West College Avenue in Tallahassee. If unable to attend, but still want to support Southern Shakespeare Festival, you can make a donation or learn more about the festival by visiting www.southernshakes.org. In the immortal words of the Bard, partying is never sweet sorrow, and it only gets better if you're in costume, man. Please visit and like the Southern Shakespeare Festival Facebook page. Your contributions may be sent to Southern Shakespeare Festival, 119 South Monroe Street, Tallahassee, Florida, 32301. And I am Dan MacDonald, with thoughts of abundant health and prosperity for you and yours from 91.5 FM WFSQ Tallahassee and 90.7 FM WFSL City of Roses, Thomasville.